Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, today is 10-20, wait.
Yeah.
10-29.
29? 29. Yeah, so, I think that's right. Yeah,
because
Saturday is Halloween.
Yeah, Saturday's Halloween.
Tuesday's Election Day.
Yeah, Tuesday's Election Day. We're going to get this shit cracking. But
everybody voted?
I'm going today.
I'm actually going today. But we got a very special guest on. We're going to jump into his segment of the show because he's a busy man and he's got 40 Zoom calls a day. So he ain't got time to play around with us. What we wanted to do was talk about SARS. It's a big topic amongst
the End SARS movement, I think.
End SARS movement. Yep. It's a big topic amongst the community and the world. And I reached out to my man, Alvin Akinti, who I've known since he was a pup, interning at Jive. Now he's a grown ass man with his own apartment and everything.
His own bills.
His own bills and shit. Yeah, you know. And Alvin and his family are Nigerian. Were you born in Nigeria and moved here, or were you born here?
No, I was born in Washington, D.C. My parents got to America in 79. I was born in 82.
Yeah, so they've been a long time. They've been here a long time.
So
you're a Nigerian-American, but you still have a lot of family in Nigeria.
Yeah, I have a ton of family. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. My father goes back regularly. You know, he's one of those. He takes a big bin full of, you know, goods, toys, chocolates, candies, and he takes it back to Nigeria maybe like 3-4 times a year. So, yeah.
Family, he goes back a lot.
Okay. Yeah, he goes back a lot. He's
back
there.
That's a lot. I don't know if anybody who goes back that often. That's a lot.
Yeah, he's back there pretty frequently. My mom, she may go like once or twice every other year. But, yeah, okay. My father goes back a lot.
When's the last time you've been there?
Oh, man, I haven't been to Nigeria in a while. Maybe when I was 16, 17?
Oh, okay, so it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's an expensive trip, man. It's not like
something
you're trying to just be out there going all willy-nilly. Yeah. It's not like you're going to be
And it's a long trip, and so that's a travel day.
Yeah. I mean, there actually is one flight out of Atlanta. They fly it every day. It's a direct flight out of Atlanta to Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, wow.
It's a Delta flight. Yeah, I was doing some research a couple years ago trying to find flights to Nigeria, and I came across Delta, and they do a flight every day. One flight every day from Atlanta to Nigeria direct. But yeah, other than that, you're going to have to go to like London and then
Come
down. Yeah.
Okay. So we wanted to, you know, get the Nigerian American in this case perspective on SARS, because like you said, you have a lot of family there. So, you know, you have friends there. You have obviously a ton of friends from Nigeria here. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it's a topic amongst the Nigerian community. And I wanted to really discuss this in depth because I think it's very important. And I didn't want to just kind of skim or miss things or miss kind of cultural things that obviously none of us would know because we're not Nigerian. So I wanted to bring you on to kind of discuss this. So my first question to you is what it seems to be the overwhelming feeling about what's going on in Nigeria with SARS.
Jeff, if I can interject, can we first have him just explain what SARS is? Because it's a unit of the Nigeria.
Yeah. It's the special anti-robbery squad. It's basically a police unit that goes out harassing, intimidating, if you want to use that word, people that they appear have money or products. So like Nigeria has a real bad problem with scamming, I'm sure everybody knows, and the rewards of scamming often bring jewelry, fancy cars, fancy phones. the police tend to look at those things as, all right, that's the target. That's somebody we need to kind of go after. That was the original kind of plan, right? But it has since gotten to a point. They've taken that mentality and gone on steroids. So it's like, even if they the slightest suspect of anything, they're going 0 to 100 real quick.
And so it's like New York stop and frisk.
Exactly. But in New York, they were always using it under the guise of like, all right, we're trying to get guns off the street, right? We're trying to get drugs off the street. Now with them, it's just like, all right, we're just trying to just get you off the street. You know, so.
And take your shit in the process.
And take your shit in the process.
Because they've become a gang.
Yeah, and it's a weird kind of situation. I had to talk with my father about this. And it's like, in the U.S., you have a police fund, right? That's one of the biggest things. You talk about the funding of the police, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reasoning for that is because police funds have gotten so big. They've gotten so lucrative. They're millions, billions of dollars in some cases. There is no structure like that in Nigeria. So the police are like on the bottom of the totem pole in the kind of political kind of municipal kind of structure. So when everybody's getting kickbacks, generations of kickbacks and corruptions, and the police are the last to get kind of any money doled out to them, any benefits doled out to them, who do you think they take it out on?
They have an incentive.
So it's like when a new regime comes in, and this is, let me start from the beginning, right? Nigeria gained independence in 1960, right? 63. My girl's over here questioning me. My father was born in 53. So like many first generation Americans, we have parents that were born, that came of age pre-independence into like Federation, right? So when Nigeria was established, there were problems of colonialism and more importantly tribalism, right? In Nigeria, you have many different ethnic groups, but you have tribes, many different tribes as well. Three major ones: Yoruba, Hausa, Fulani, and Igbo.
Which tribe is your family?
I'm Yoruba. I'm from the Yoruba tribe. So when the country was established, there were a lot of tribal tensions that weren't really taken care of, right? So you have this kind of powder keg of tribal beef and tribal just kind of conflicts, and that transitions into the political system, right? So if the president, let's say, is Igbo, he's going to empower his Igbo tribesmen and his friends. If the Yoruba person's in power, he's going to empower his Yoruba tribesmen, and so on, so on. So you end up having this kind of, it's not even political, because political you can kind of associate with policy and ideas. Your attention is tribal, and that's something that you're not really going to kind of overcome easily. It doesn't overcome itself easily.
Yeah, because that's like even more complex than just ethnicity or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
It's almost like family, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So when you have that, when that is the basis of your political system, it's bound to cause tension. And you're seeing that. You're seeing the corruption take place, the kickbacks take place, the coups and the new regimes that really just do the same thing that the old regime did. The problem now is that we're at a point where Nigeria is very influential. It's very economically promising. Nigerians themselves are influential across the globe. We're in sports, we're in fashion, we're in music, we're in acting. And you have this
tech too.
Yeah, we're in tech. And you have this youth of Nigeria that's like, all right, we're not going to take this anymore. And we're going to speak up about this. And more importantly, we live in a digital age. So before, when the government could kind of like squash things and say, oh, that didn't happen. We saw that happen the other day. They said that though, we didn't kill anybody. But no, we got the footage. That can't happen anymore. And they're all over the world. Nigerians are in London. They're in Paris. They're in the United States. They're in Germany. So it's not going to be an isolated incident in just Nigeria anymore. It's going to take shape. It's going to take shape and show itself in LA, in New York, in Paris, in Germany, in Italy. So that's kind of what you're seeing right now. You're seeing this kind of like powder keg explosion, and the youth of Nigeria aren't going to take it anymore. When I say the youth of Nigeria, I'm not talking just like 18, 17-year-olds. I'm talking about people my age and even older that that have parents that have grown up in this kind of cycle of political tribal corruption. So that's kind of the situation.
I wanted to ask one question. What is your father's kind of generation compared to, you know, your generation younger? Is there a split on what's going on? Are there some people that are looking at it like, well, we need the SARS, you know, control this crazy, or is it everybody's just like, and SARS?
Yeah, when you talk about SARS, it's deeper than just SARS. It's like, it's a corrupted political system, and it's something that SARS is just the mechanism to kind of keep the shit going. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
If they didn't call it SARS, they would call it something else. If they abolished SARS, they would just put something else in place and the same stuff would keep happening. So these are issues that, and as a first generation American, you see, like, you listen to your parents at parties at night, getting angry, having these conversations about the politics and the corruption going on in Nigeria. So this isn't just like, oh, our generation kind of, this happened on our watch and now we're retaliating. Now this happens. This has been going on since my father was a young man. Like,
right.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, like the first time I went to Nigeria, I vividly remember we were driving down a highway and we got stopped by the police. And he was like, "Yo, like you gonna pay up that bread? Like, this is the toll. You know what I'm saying?
Like dead ass. Like any up.
This is normal. You know what I'm saying? That happened a couple times. So it's not like it's a SARS thing. While SARS is the it's the problem, obviously, but it's deeper than that. It's much deeper than that. It's a corrupted cycle. It's like in Game of Thrones when Daenerys said, like, one team, one versus the Lannisters, then it's the Starks. We got to crush the wheel, you know, or it's just going to keep going around and around.
So I had a question. So the SARS unit has been active since, I think, the mid-80s. And by the time it came to national, so it came to my attention, I guess it's been 2 weeks now, actually, one of my followers from Nigeria hit me and was like, "Can you let your followers know about the NSARS movement?" But he didn't explain what it was or link to anything. So I had to like go digging in Nigerian Twitter and South African Twitter to find some more information and right about like by a couple of days later, it was more widespread, but. Not too long after the world turned its eyes towards Lagos and Nigeria, there was an announcement that they were disbanding the SARS unit. But then all our Niger cousins were like, "Nah, don't listen to that."
Exactly.
It only matters. Can you explain that part? Because apparently they've said that before, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like what I said earlier. Like if they abolish it or say we're going to end it, they're going to do the same thing. They're just going to call it something else. So that's where the solve is. It's like, you can't just say like end SARS. You need to have a kind of restructuring of what the government is and means to the people. Until you have that, if another president's going to come in there and he's not going to stop SARS. There's too much. He's not going to control the police. There's too much money and kickbacks to properly like structure the police. You know what I mean? Like, why give up $1 billion to the state police when I can just keep that billion to myself?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Can you tell us about
the massacre at the gate last week?
I can share with you as much as what I've heard. Right. It was a situation where protesters were out there peacefully protesting. There was, I was told or overheard that there was a warning, some sort of like, "Hey, get out of here." Nobody moved, and then shots were fired. Only thing I do know
while
is
people were
while people, yeah, while people, while people were peacefully protesting. The only thing I really can speak, not even speak to, but it's mentioned is that the government tried to kind of quiet it and say that it didn't happen. But as I mentioned before, we live in a digital age, and kids are carrying cameras and they're filming everything. So I think, you know, in instances like that and moments like that where the youth and the public can really say, like, "Oh, you're lying," and show the world that you're lying. That's what needs to happen to kind of correct things.
I saw the same thing. I saw a lot of, I did some research on this coming on. It was very interesting. It was like I think Nye's example of stop and frisk, it was kind of, her analogy rather, it was kind of good, because people, there were people saying in the videos, like, how can you just look at me and tell I'm a criminal because I have on a nice shirt? And it was literally the same thing in New York, like 15 to 20 years ago. Like, if I got on a North Face, you know, goose down, that means I'm selling drugs. Like, right? Like, I'm just walking down the street, minding my own business. So it was very interesting how they were using a lot of the same tactics. Have you been talking to people, you know, from who are still living in Nigeria? Have you kind of speaking to them and like who are kind of around it and on the ground, and what are they saying?
No, not really. I haven't really got a chance to talk to too many people on the ground in Nigeria. Most of my kind of communication has been with like Nigerian Americans in the States, just kind of like talking with our parents and just hearing their stories, you know what I mean? Like hearing what the things that they've gone through and the things that they've seen, and just kind of how it is kind of shaping us today. But no, I haven't really had much talk with people on the ground. It's really been more so like Nigerian Americans here. Yeah. And a lot of talks with my parents. I've found myself talking to my father a lot the past couple weeks.
What's he saying?
He's just like, my father's a pretty laid back guy, but when he starts talking about this, he gets really passionate. You know what I mean? He gets really like talking a million miles a minute, because this is something that him and his generation have tried to bring to the light, and it really hasn't. But it now, because of, you know, social media and mm-hmm. just the influence, I can't overstate that enough, that the influence that Nigerians have in the world and culture is what's really, I think, going to really push this over the top, because the country has so much potential. We saw what happened in Afrochella last year in Ghana. You know what I mean? Like, Nigeria's a couple countries right over. Like, they see that. And Nigerians are very proud people, and they don't like the fact that, you know, their country is perceived the way it is. Youth in Nigeria don't like the fact that their country is perceived the way it is. A country with that much wealth, it shouldn't be normal for the power to just cut out in the richest neighborhoods in town. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are things that shouldn't happen, and they happen because you have a government that's corrupt and that relies on kickbacks, and that it's willing to sell its own people out for, you know, for personal gains.
So, Alvin, as for, you know, those of us, especially I would say Black Americans, there, you know, there's definitely been a plea for us to not turn away and to engage, and obviously to amplify, because like you said, the pressure of the globe watching might be what it takes for mm-hmm. there to be some real change. I realize that you say you're talking mostly to other Nigerian Americans, and you haven't necessarily spoken to folks on the ground at length, but just as, you know, a countryman, do you have suggestions for how we can best support and amplify the movement in a way that's like helpful? Because, you know, granted, Black Lives Matter is a global movement, but mm-hmm. we've seen Black people around the world, you know, chime in with us, right? So like, how can we now best do the same in response?
I think it's gonna take a lot of educating mainstream media. When I say mainstream media, I'm talking like white media. You know what I mean? Like, we see a lot of the NSARS talk in Black circles, in like Black publications. So it feels like a Black issue. But until, you know, the E! Newses and the Bravos talk about it with the same kind of depth and sincerity that Black media is talking about it, it's going to be hard to kind of take it. It's going to be hard for that corner to turn. It's going to be hard for people like the UN to really take it that much serious if it's just siloed in like Black conversation. I think that's what's really going to have to happen. And to make that happen, we're going to need Black people in America to educate, you know, that media on it, because they may not know. They just, we're talking about a country that is 60 years old. You know what I mean? It's not, a lot of people don't really get that. Right. So the corruption.
I want to point out parallels. It's such a similar conversation to what Black people have here about the small amount of time we've been out of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
We've had full rights as a people here. Like, the parallels are striking in terms of just trying to fight, like you said, against a corrupt system.
Right.
Have our best interests at heart.
And when you're starting anything new, it comes with trials, it comes with tribulations, it comes with quarrels. Like, nobody would expect like African Americans in this country to go from slavery to you know, George Jetson in the span of 200 years. That doesn't happen. Like, there's a lot to work out. And we're working through it. But we know that as Americans, the world doesn't know about that in Nigeria because it's such a siloed kind of situation. So
what do you think the odds are that you're not a politician, so I don't know if I could ask what the steps are, but like, it seems like the SARS type unit, you know, because the police, you know, is so ingrained. Like, how long do you think is a real possibility for this to kind of end and change, or is it just
that is the billion dollar question?
It's been going on for so long.
That's the billion dollar question, and I really think there's two schools of thought, right? There is the school of thought that Nigeria can fix itself from within, right? That the right people can be elected and that can happen. There's also a school of thought that outside involvement is the answer. I tend to see where both sides are coming from, but I we've seen the first way work. We've seen the first way in action for years, and it's just brought on corruption after corruption after corruption. I kind of think that, I'm not saying like someone like Jack Dorsey needs to come through and like fix things, but you know, the UN should really step in, because this is a global situation with impact that can really fuck a lot of shit up. Like, Africa's it's a superpower in Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, Nigeria's a superpower in Africa. So the health and stability of Nigeria really, it should be a world issue. So
right.
I would hate to like say that, oh, this country can't fix itself, but we've seen what's been going on the past 6 years. Like, if the UN can't come through and help or fix it on their own, they should at least be able to come through and assist in the process, because right. What's been going on hasn't been working.
It's not working, yeah.
Right.
Sean Inca, y'all have any questions?
No, I don't. I think he summed up everything that, you know, I wanted to ask. So yeah, it definitely gave me a lot of clarity. Well, you know what? Actually, one quick question: is this particular unit? Because I was reading that it was a federal unit. Like, so is this particular unit some sort of? Is this like in addition to what a lot of sort of regimes have, like a secret police sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a special unit within the actual police force. So like, you'll have like your regular municipal police, and you'll have your, you know, traffic cops, whatever. This is a specially designed unit to kind of on paper combat scammers, but it's turned into like, all right, now we're going after everybody that has nice kicks on.
Yeah. So to your point, I think, you know, disbanding a unit like that sounds really great in theory until they can't put food on their table.
Right.
And now you have basically this band of armed folks that are willing to do whatever it takes to put food on their table.
Yeah. So, Alvin, on my end, I've been following, there's a Twitter account, feminist_co, that's been, I found it to be pretty helpful for information. It's a it's run by a young woman in Nigeria, and also like links to the, because I just want to say on a side note, the organization to support protesters, I found so efficient, so fast. Like, they have, for those who don't know and our listeners, within like a couple of weeks, there were like a whole phone line set up. It was like, press 1 if you need legal assistance, press 2 if you need medical assistance, press 3 if you need financial assistance, press 4 if you need transportation. Like the efficiency has been crazy. I wanted to ask you if you have any suggested sources that people could follow for information, because I've been really trying to encourage folks to follow people on the ground if they can. I also did want to mention for our listeners, like, some things I think we don't think about when we think about South Africa and West Africa especially, is the fact that, like you said, the power goes in and out. Their data can be tricky. So like WhatsApp is heavier there than we use it here. Like, that tends to be their main form and mode of communication. So there might be some WhatsApp app groups you can join, but also if you're talking to anybody who's asking for donations, vet them and make sure that there's like a Bitcoin transfer happening, because that's what I'm finding people are asking for, is like Bitcoin currency in terms of donations. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yeah, the cryptocurrency, just digital kind of currency is really big out there. So I would definitely look to that as a form of sending money off. In terms of organizations, Diaspora Against SARS is the one I've just kind of been looking at. A friend of mine put me onto it, so that's just kind of been my main source of keeping up with what's going on in terms of helping protesters and getting information on how to assist in the protest and the awareness of it all.
Yeah, there's also someone referred me to. There's a site called Dubawa. I'm going to spell it. It's at Dubawang. It's Nigerian's independent verification and fact checking platform. So it's basically like telling you if stuff is true or false in general, not just with the NSARS movement. So yeah,
if there's one thing Nigerians are very resourceful, and we know how to kind of, if you've ever seen a Nigerian prince email, we know how to make use of the internet. So yeah.
Inky, you got anything to say before we go?
That was my question, what Naya asked. How we can best support protesters. We know that story, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you, my man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Alvin, for taking time to...
Man, thanks for having me. I listen to you guys religiously. I love you guys. Big fans of each of you guys individually.
Thank you.
So, you know, glad to be on, and you know, if you ever need somebody to talk some shit in a lighter tone, you know, feel free to hit me up.
Yeah, we'll swing you back.
Absolutely.
You know, you're a DC ass nigga, so you know, y'all like to talk that shit.
Man, whatever, man. Keep telling your stories, man.
You know, yeah, so thank you. I really appreciate it, man. And as this story, you know, continues to grow, we'll probably have you back on when there's, you know, some more some more updates about what's happening.
Definitely. Yeah, we will get through this, man. I believe it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Thank you, Alvin. All right,
bro. Peace, y'all.
All right, man. Be safe. Thank you, Alvin, for coming on. We really appreciated that. It's a very, you know, serious topic, and you know, we appreciate your insight into what's happening in Nigeria. So let's move on to the rest of the show. It's funny, like kind of like some stuff happened this week, but I mean, some stuff happens every week. But I didn't feel like it was super crazy, but it was some interesting things that happened. As usual, we're going to start light and go a little deeper. So I think I want to start initially with me and Inca getting our TV shit out the way while y'all niggas do your
Once again, like, I just want to say for our listeners.
I know, me and Inca partnered up with y'all.
I know.
Box y'all out.
But I just want to say for the listeners again, I just want to point out how the TV segment of Pop Life is not democratic at all.
It's a dictatorship.
All that matters is what this nigga watches. Not what nobody, not what we watch.
My son doesn't work.
if it wasn't for y'all listeners, this nigga have us talking about Madea comeback reunion.
We doing a whole hour.
Madea's COVID diagnosis.
A whole hour on House of Pain.
We just gonna call this the own section of the show.
The own section of the show.
So this week on OWN.
Because I've been trying to talk about The Vow and Seduced Forever.
Okay. Well, actually, you know what? Okay. I will say this. I've been wanting to actually watch The Vow because I'm very, really interested about it.
Okay, so I'll just interject before y'all get
in. And I know there's two.
There's two. So it's kind of like the difference between the two Firefest docs, right? Mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. one that was created by people who were part of it. And it's all, and like, you might say are trying to like separate themselves from the fallout.
Okay.
And then there's another that was created that was like, nah, motherfucker, this shit was actually nuts, and let us tell you what happened. So I really almost kind of recommend you start with at least like the first three episodes of The Vow, because it started really gripping and then it just kind of
meanders.
Yeah. Then it kind of meanders. So like for me, I think that it's kind of like the same thing I was suggesting with Firefest. It's like you almost got to start with the milder one to really understand how crazy it was when you watch the crazy one, right?
Okay.
So I suggest.
So which is which?
Huh?
The vow is the lighter one.
HBO, because that one is was created by two actually very people who are high ranking in the organization, and then like broke out. And I suggest you start with at least, like I said, like the first maybe three eps of that, because then it started to just kind of trail off, and then jump over to Seduce.
And Seduce is on Stars, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and it's cool. It's only it's every Sunday. It's only four parts. And it's only on the second one, but like literally people kept saying after the first 15 minutes, you already like, oh, this shit is way rawer than the other one.
Then so, they were saying, So I'll say this to say, I definitely plan on watching it so we can get into that on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just need to file
I got you.
I've been meaning to watch that too. It's just, I was watching Lovecraft Country in real time, and there was no way I could get into that immediately after.
I get that. I totally get that.
Duly noted, we will be picking up The Vow very soon. So the shows that me and Inka watched this week. Me and Inka, now we've been hitting each other like, yo, you saw so-and-so? You watched so-and-so? The first one we watched, I don't know, did you finish the Plasgo series, Inka?
I did. Was crazy. So I had the flu this week. So,
Right after you were
like, I was laid up.
Big date. You were laid up for the rest of the days.
Yeah, man. I go to one restaurant and then I got to lay down for 4 days. Mm-hmm. So that's my COVID lesson. Just stay your ass in the house.
Exactly. It's not working. So welcome to Plasma. And I just stumbled on this. It's on Hulu. I totally stumbled. I didn't know anything about it. I was just kind of, you know, just flicking. And I was like, oh, what the hell is this? So Welcome to Plasgo is about this family called the Plafs. And they live in Southeast Georgia. Like so low down, so far down in Georgia that the big city to them is Tallahassee. So they're like deep Georgia. They live on this 55-acre farm. So it's a family of, you know, obviously a man and his wife, and they have, what is it, 9 children. And they all look like it's trip because they're like super blonde, like blue-eyed, like
platinum, you know, blonde,
blonde, blue-eyed,
good-looking,
you know,
people.
Good-looking people, like, you know, and they were raised on like the mom raised them on a diet of no sugar and no fast food and none of that shit. So all the kids are like very lean and fit, you know, plus from working on the farm. They're very like outdoorsy and all that, and they have this, looks like this idyllic life.
Homeschooled.
Yeah, so they don't really have interactions with the people. They couldn't watch television. They didn't have, you know, internet access. The mom did, but the rest of them didn't. So it was very just like this idyllic life at first, and then
in the first episode, it is very. Like, almost like when we were introduced to the Duggars, that 19 kids accounting family.
Yeah.
The first episode of that is like very, oh, you know, we believe in Jesus and.
Yeah, exactly. This is our family. And we're good Christian people and everything. And then the Plas aren't bad people. Like, I don't want to make it seem like we're doing some like heinous, you know, devil worshiping shit on the low, because they weren't. But it was just very interesting. The gist of it was how this mom. More so the mom, the dad too, but the mom was kind of more the dominant parent, because she's the one who's home, because the dad still works.
Yeah.
How they were trying to do this thing to kind of like keep their children and their family away from any outside forces that would influence them to do anything what they deemed negative. And it reminded me also almost of in Jurassic Park when Jeff Goldblum's character was like, nature will find a way. And it's kind of like, no matter what you do, like you can't, especially because the kids are, they're individuals. They have individual personalities and they focus on one daughter, Mariah, who's like 16 in the show, and who's very like rebellious. And she's like, nah, like, I want to go out. I want to meet people. Like, I want to do shit. Like, I want to go to.
I want
to
wear jeans.
I want jean cut off shorts. And I want to, like, wear a little tank top. And I want to go to college. And I want to go, like, do shit. And this, and it's just kind of like the fight between, it's kind of, she's the, her and her brother, who actually, Micah, who's the next stage up, who's like this really good looking kid, who ends up like trying to be a model. I think he is modeling now, actually. Same thing. Yeah. They're like, nah, like we ain't with all this shit. And then the other outside influence is the oldest son gets married at 21 years old, and his wife is not of that. Apparently his wife's family was right. Like that. Go ahead, Inga.
Right. The oldest daughter, who we don't see in the show physically, she's married also. Yes. But she don't fuck with them at all. Like, yeah. You don't hear them talk about her. They don't call her, none of that. Which I think the mom is, like, miserable, and she's jealous of the younger women around her who are finding agency outside of her.
Yes.
But anyway, Olivia is... the one that married, what's his name?
Damn. Go ahead, you keep talking. I'm looking up.
The oldest son. Mm-hmm. And she's like, they initially didn't want them together because she's so worldly, mm-hmm. quote unquote. But what it is like she grew up in
Ethan,
that kind of
Ethan.
Ethan, right, mm-hmm. right. So Olivia and Ethan, right, are married. And she grew up and she kind of challenged the religion. Because she grew up in a house where women couldn't, like, speak in church.
Yeah.
So she felt a way about that from an early age. She challenged it and would ask her father questions. And they ended up leaving the church and gave her the freedom to kind of discover, you know, herself. And, you know, she of course, she still loves the Lord. They still go to church. And, you know, she's like a good egg that married Ethan. And I think the mom is so jealous of that because she wanted to get out of her own life so mm-hmm. badly, and she could not. Yeah. Like, she had, you know, go all the way left. So there's tension between the mom and Olivia.
Yeah.
And that was so exciting to watch because Olivia's like, hey, girl, Mariah wants to go with me, so I'm going to let her come see the world with me.
Yeah, they take a trip to San Francisco because Olivia's a photographer.
Right, right, right.
And so she goes to San Francisco to shoot a wedding. And this is the first time Mariah leaves the town, you know, besides Tallahassee.
Like, it's hard to explain if you haven't watched it.
Yeah, but it's a trip. It's a very compelling reality show. Like I said, it did not do what I thought it was going to do when I started to watch it, which is why I hit it. Like, yo, I want you to watch this because this is like, it takes some twists and some turns that it was very interesting to see Mariah go to San Francisco, like this big popping city. And she had never seen anything. She was like literally like a deer in headlights, like, oh shit, gay people. Oh shit, like, look at that. Oh shit, look at that. Like, but she liked it. She was like, oh, this is dope. I like this. Like, my mother told me, like, I was going to go there basically get murdered in the street. You know what I'm saying? And meanwhile, I'll go to this great city and I'm having a good time. So, and there's some tension with that and everything. Yeah. Just to let y'all know, y'all going to be mad at us because season 2 starts November 10th. And so, yes. So me and Inka will be picking up on season 2 and discussing this while Sean and Naima look at their phones. The other thing that we want to discuss that we know y'all didn't watch, OWN started a new show called Put a Ring on It. The show was really good. Inka, isn't the show so good?
The premise is look at bruh face. They took 3 black couples who are in long-term relationships but haven't gotten married yet. And I think the object of the show is to get them to the finish line and get engaged by the end. But what they do is have them go on dates with other people to, like, figure out their shit and if they really want to be there and whatever. Yeah.
Black people?
Black people. When Inka said they go on dates with other people, now I did the scared straight lady head.
What?
That's what I did when I found out. Yeah. I was like, Jeff, what the hell do you have?
Yeah.
None of these people are getting married.
None of these people get married. Like, and of course, as
this the entire fact of agreeing to go on a date with other people when you're a black person in the law, because let's be real. Once you're a Black person in a long-term relationship that goes beyond a certain number of years, the mutual understanding is supposed to be that this is the closest y'all going to come to getting married. And you're supposed to
yeah, that's what it is.
So nigga, you know, what life insurance papers are?
Yeah. It's old lady, old man shit, right? So it's like, yeah. that's my old man. I'm gonna be out here, but I'm gonna come home, like whatever, right?
We literally call it Black people married.
Yeah. We literally call it that. That's actually a thing.
Just the fact that you agree, like, what you mean you going out with somebody else, bitch? This ain't, what the fuck? That's why I did that head, because I was like, oh, this.
Oh yeah, it's
the consecration of the Black people marriage.
Yeah, two of the couples are absolutely Black people married. Like,
absolutely.
One from New Orleans. The dude is like, that's my old lady. He like owns a barbershop.
Yeah.
They've been together 9 years. He proposed to her. She
But the thing is, they're still the couple.
But I don't think they're gonna get married.
I don't either. But the thing is, the couples are pretty, they're young though. They're like 32. Yeah. They're not like 45, 50.
They can still be black people married. Absolutely.
What I'm saying is like that being Black people married that young leaves a lot of time and room for shit to go left. When you Black people married at 57, it's like, yeah, it is what it is. You know, when you 32, you're still like, well, shit, I might could find something better if I really stumble off of. So they start going on dates with other people. And, you know, it's obviously the whole series. So this week was the first episode. They went on a couple of dates, but, you know, the women went out first and they were pretty apprehensive because the first time and the men are pissed off when they leave. But you can see in the previews, it starts getting a little looser. Like, they're like, okay, I'm going on a date, like, for real. Like, I'm not just, like, kind of doing it for the show. And, you know, we're going to see where it goes. So, please, Nine, Sean, give this one a shot, because I promise you, it's spicy. It's spicy.
All right. I'm going to check it out.
My interest is peaked. I'm going to watch.
Yeah, it's spicy.
There's only one episode so far. I think it comes on Fridays. So,
yeah, check it out. Yeah, on demand or whatever. I want to jump in. Y'all do watch Real Housewives of Potomac, right?
I have not, but I've seen that it's cranking up. I don't have the tolerance. I need to watch it.
That's fair.
I don't have the tolerance.
They are exhausting.
I see more. I see that apparently the season is getting.
Yes, I think this is the
first season where I've seen this many people talking about Potomac since like the first.
Yeah, for sure. So it was good this week. By the way, just peace to friend of the show, Angelique. I won't say anything, but you know, she went to Hampton with Giselle. She knows her. So I mean, I won't talk about our conversation, but anyway.
I mean, you basically just suggested.
I mean, I just saying, you know, she just.
I mean, you basically just implied that Angelique
was talking
about
that. No, Angelique just said that she was a good student. So anyway. this week, they're still focusing on this. Well, the fight has happened and kind of like the aftermath of the fight between Candace and, what's her name?
Monique.
I'm about to call her Monica. I'm tripping. Monique. kind of like Candace's feeling that Karen Huger specifically should be ostracizing Monique and kind of be on her side in this whole scenario and pick her side because Monique was wrong and Candace not taking any responsibility for anything to do with this fight, you know? And it's kind of weird because, I have to say, I really like Karen this season. I like how Karen's been rocking the season. She's been, you know, owning her shit, you know, she's not hiding.
I was about to ask why.
Because she hasn't, you know, previous seasons, like any kind of stuff with her and Ray, she kind of hid it, you know, she kind of would like kind of hide it. You know, even when the taxes thing happened, it was kind of like, well, you'll have to find, like she would kind of, this season she seems to be kind of more like open.
No. I think she was respecting that nigga earlier seasons. Like,
oh, this season. She don't respect Ray no more.
we had tax mad. Problems in our house and
everybody got tax problems. It's my life.
Savings. Like, if I told the world I used my savings to bail my husband out, Like, I'd be upset with me too. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like she's telling a bit too much of the family business.
Mm.
All of that was unnecessary. Like, we we're into your finances because the press
taxes or whatever,
but like, that's too much for me.
A big part of her revealing that was to, really, that was for her. That was for her benefit, right? Like, it was to show that the tables had turned between her and Ray, right? Like, the dynamics of that relationship had clearly shifted on a financial end, right? Like, let's just be frank about it, right? Like, Ray clearly had some issues. He doesn't really have much earning potential right now at his age. And so she is probably the main breadwinner. And I think that she wants to remind him of that, you know what I'm saying, whenever possible. Now, that could be because it just makes her feel good. It could also be because Ray did that shit to her for 25 years. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what the motivation may be behind it.
It feels like the latter, you know.
But there is clearly her telling that was her laying out, I've done this. Right? Like, she wants the people inside that circle to know, like, this nigga was in a jam and I came and bailed him out with the money that I made on my own.
Yeah, yeah. And she said that when they went to the therapy session this week. I don't know if you saw it this week. She was like, basically, like, Ray, like, I'm still waiting for you to say thank you, nigga.
that's just crazy to me, right? Yeah. Like, there's no, you know, I mean, look, obviously, there's some level of getting a thank you or some gesture of gratitude, right?
Yeah. Like, acknowledgement.
Look for
acknowledgement.
But also, Ray is like, who knows how many fucking countless businesses and shit he funded over the course of 25 years that done went under.
Ray, I'm going to sell this Amway.
Yeah, sell Amway. You got Body Magic in the house. Goddamn garage
full of 5X links or whatever the fuck.
Garage full of coffee and shit. You selling healing coffee and Slim
vitamins. Vitamins and shit.
All that shit he done financed. Opening a boutique with your girlfriend.
Well, exactly.
You know, he co-signing leases and shit.
Yeah.
Now, it's, you know, I mean, to me, I understand Ray is like, This has been the pot, right? Like, I don't think he's ever, doesn't seem like he was a, this is mine and I'll give you a little bit type of husband.
Yeah.
It seems like, hey, when shit was going on in your life, I took care of it because we're a family, we're married, right? Mm-hmm. When shit goes on in my life, I'm expecting the same if you have the ability to, like, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? It would be like, yo, nigga, I'm getting ready to get put out for $400 and I got $400 in my pocket. Like, why would I not give that to my man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I just, I mean, come on,
right.
man.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I really feel like, I mean, just to focus on Karen for a second, like, I really feel like, you know, the Karen and Ray, I should say, I really feel like the dynamic has, you can say, has definitely shifted. And I think I said this last week, I really feel like Ray is mad. He's mad at a couple of things. He's mad at the financial thing that happened, which is nobody's fault, I guess, or his accountant's fault. It's not Karen's fault. I think he's just mad that he was in this predicament at this age when he had seemed to be planned very meticulously to not be in that predicament at this age and got jammed up in some shit, right? So he's mad about that. And I think he's also kind of mad at Karen because he didn't foresee the show taking off. Like, he's ready to go. He's like, I'm ready to go. And we got to stay here in Potomac in this fucking big ass house we don't need and spend money we don't need to be spending because you're getting your shit off. And the plan was for us to leave. And I'm ready to go.
Well, in fairness to Karen.
You know, I'm not saying Ray's right, by the way. I'm just saying.
I was going to say, in fairness to Karen, nigga, you're going to sit down, you're going to go get a haircut and put this blazer on and come to this perfume opening. Nigga, that's what you're going to do.
Because it's where the money comes from.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? So he has to be. And so, yes, I get it. You know, he's
a black man. It's the old black man pride shit.
It's old man shit. You're telling a man who has had a certain dynamic in his life for the last 40 to almost 50 years, because Ray's got to be, what, 70, in his early 70s?
I think 70, 71.
So let's just say, for the sake of numbers, you know, Ray's been out here for 40 years, right? And so the dynamic of his life, and I'm assuming his relationships, has been very traditional. You know, I go out and earn. I'm expecting a certain level of lifestyle when I come home. And that shit is just not there anymore. You know, there may be some frustration with, you know, health concerns. Like we said, Ray doesn't look like he's as spry anymore. Maybe, no. You know, you know, in fairness, the reality is at 70, my nigga, you looking, you closer to the end than the beginning. And yeah, that shit starts to impact your decisions, particularly when you can't really get your way.
Yeah.
Right. And now for 40 years, what you said has been the gospel. And now you really kind of have to
sit tight, my nigga. Yeah, because Karen's earning these big bucks. And like, why would she walk away from, I'm sure, a nice paycheck? That show's been on now for 4 or 5 seasons at least, right?
Well, I tell people all the time, listen, they make good money. You know, listen, nobody's not bending down to pick up the money that folks make. But this, it's always the ancillary bread. It's always the connections and the ability to get into rooms that being on TV allows you.
True.
That's really where you are supposed to have your ducks in a row and all of your shit lined up. Because this can end, the TV shit can end at any point. They could tell Karen, hey man, we don't really want to fuck with y'all no more, and they could be on the couch, right? So if you haven't lined up anything, you know, you're in a big chunk of your income and not, you know, not able to place it.
Yeah, so. I'm enjoying
Shout out to NeNe Leakes.
Shout out to NeNe Leakes, who's like, who's looking kind of crazy right now. The only other thing is I want to mention is, because I want to just move into other stuff. What did you think about the Giselle Jamal conversation in the car?
I turned away from that.
You turned away from it?
Yeah, I would never. I don't even know what to say. None of their relationship doesn't interest me in the slightest. particularly because of how she initially came out on the show about their relationship, and particularly how she has been focused on not, you know, on forgetting all of the things she said previous to that.
Exactly.
So I just check out on that part.
Yeah, it feels very like for the show kind of thing to me.
It's very performative.
Yeah, I know. I'm asked a question. I know the answer to. I don't know why I've been asking this. Did any of y'all niggas watch the BET Hip Hop Awards?
No. Nope.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a second.
I forgot that shit was even happening until people were tweeting about
it. Yeah, not at all.
I am at some point going to go back and find the Brandy Cypher to watch, but other than that, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
The interesting part was I had no inclination to even check in. Like the previous years, I would say, all right, let me turn this shit on and watch.
See what some of these niggas is doing.
Nigga, I was streaming something and said, I ain't turning this shit on. I'm good.
I watched it. You know, it actually was a well-produced show. It moved quickly. It wasn't any kind of like dull moments. The performances were all pretty good. The Brandy Cypher was really good. That was the last cypher of the night. Look, I'm not telling people to run out and watch it, but like, it actually was a pretty good show, all things considered. Like, with having to do it, you know, pandemic style and all that type of stuff, it was actually really well produced.
I heard I saw some people saying that between this and the BET Awards, they actually feel like
they should kind of keep it going like this.
Well, that the network should at least incorporate some of, you know, practices from this, because. I'm gonna just say this is actually not a shot at BET per se, but it's partially our people, it's partially a lack of professionalism with some of the artists. But like the live moments don't always work on BET.
No, they don't.
And it's not all BET's fault. So you know, having to have stuff in the can ahead of time to put together sometimes works to their benefit.
Yeah. Like I said, it was well produced, and you know, you're right. Like there's like. And I don't know shots, because I actually like their little album, even though it's filthy. But it's good, like a good gym album. The City Girls, as an example, right? them doing what they did live, I don't know if they could have pulled it off. But with the, them doing it on the show, without obviously being able to probably like do it again if they messed up and you know all that stuff, their performance on the show was actually very good. So just, you know, if you got time, just check out the Brandy Cypher. It's Brandy, Tiana Taylor, Erica Badu, and her, yes, and they were all rapping. It was really, really good. They rapped to "I Want to Be Down." It was really, really good. Did y'all see this Ice Cube thing this week?
Which one?
Okay, so
it's Claudia Jordan.
Yes. So Ice Cube went on I forget the name of that show. The Claudia Jordan has basically like a kind of like a show, like The Real.
See, I think it's called Tea with Queens or something.
Is that what it is?
Okay, Tea with Queens?
Or drink, it's something with Queens. It's something with Queens. And it's like her, Selena Johnson.
Yeah.
I think Lisa Ray.
Lisa Ray, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically The Real. It's The View. Auntie edition.
Real, plus
it,
the real, okay.
Yes.
It's the auntie, that's literally the perfect description. Okay. The auntie version of The Real, of The View, rather. So they had Ice Cube on this week. I mean, it shows me like how, and I don't, this is not a shot at Claudia Jordan them show at all, but it just goes to me to show, it shows me how like low Ice Cube is going and how he'll go anywhere trying to hang on to this fuckery. Like, you know, he's just, you want to have me on? I'll bet. I'll just go, like, it's just, because he's just trying to, you know, keep it going with this bullshit. So on the show, they had, apparently there was a call set up after, you know, all this kind of ruckus with Kamala. It was supposed to be Cube.
He had already talked to Biden's team, though, by the way. Yeah. I don't know if he admits to that, but he did have a conversation with Biden.
Yes, he did admit, he didn't admit to that at first. He kept acting like he did.
Yes,
he did, exactly. Then he was supposed to have a Zoom call with Kamala, but it was going to be him and some other entertainers on there as well. I don't know who the other entertainers are, but it was just going to be an Ice Cube call.
I think Kamala talked to Tip.
Was Killer Mike on there maybe?
Killer Mike,
DL Hughley was supposed to be on it.
All the problematic
and a couple of other folk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was supposed to be on that call, and they asked him on the show why he didn't do the call. And he said, well, because I want to do a call by myself. I don't want to be talking with her with other people. Like, I think I deserve a call, a one-on-one call. It's like, nigga, again. Like,
he said
like,
he wanted to talk to people who get things done.
The ego is
Claudia Jordan.
The ego is amazing for
it's
me.
Amazing. Like Russ said last week, nigga, she, like, this less than a week away, she's running for the vice president of this country. And she and her team and the Biden team decided to carve out probably 15 minutes or so for her to at least hear you out. And you feel like it ain't good enough for me, because if it ain't me by myself with the fucking...
Well, go ahead, here's here was his angle. His angle in stating that was to say that his contract with Contract for Black America... was something that took a lot of, and I may be quoting here, but I'm paraphrasing, it took a lot of man hours to get that done. And to that
point, a lot of cutting and pasting and pontificating.
I really wanted to say, my nigga, you might need to look at some timesheets, because that did not take a lot of man. First of all, it's a 4-page document.
Exactly.
Right? Like, we can start there, my nigga. Like Jordan could do a 4-page document between this podcast.
Word.
Right. So we ain't even going to talk about that. But like, there was nothing in depth or concrete. And what I feel like I would love to have seen was anybody that's interviewing him, if they could just take one of those things and have him explain
his
position start to finish.
Yeah.
I think Homegirl tried on Roland's show, and he just really couldn't.
He blew that. He blew the Roland.
He couldn't.
Well, and so to me, you know, listen, I will say this. I don't disagree with the fact that being on a call with 11 other motherfuckers, it might not be as productive as one might think.
Yeah.
Right. And so I can say you can be wrong and right kind of in the same space. And I don't disagree that, you know, him and it sounded to me as though the call, he assumed this call was some sort of pitch meeting, almost like it was like everyone pitching their ideas of what they wanted to do. And his idea was like, look, I've put work into my shit. I'm not just out here winging it. At least this is what it sounded like. And so I deserve to have this sort of platform by myself. And again, I say, nobody cares, my nigga. Nobody cares.
I think that's the point, right? Because what I feel like that call was more of a sounding board situation, kind of like y'all niggas clearly got a problem with me, so let's figure this out, for lack of a better word, right? Because I actually talked to somebody who has been working with the campaign. I'm not saying this idea came from me, but it's a similar conversation that we had where I was like, the people y'all really need to be appealing to are the people who are listening to these niggas, right? Like, if you doing targeted ads, target the motherfuckers who follow these niggas, because combating the disinformation is the problem. And everybody that's listed in that list is those niggas, right? So it's the pseudo intellectual, you know, black faux intelligentsia who are actually working against like facts and details and context. And I think that might have been like a for lack of a better word, like an airing out type of situation. Okay. Like, if y'all feel like I don't hear y'all, or y'all got a problem with me, or there's something y'all feel like you need to address with me that you think I'm not speaking to y'all, like, what is it? Let's figure it out.
You got something to say, to say it then, Earl.
But my thing with Cube is that it's like, yeah, okay, nigga, first of all, yes, you are different than these others in the fact that you have created this on this platform of your own, you know, pulling from other places, though you still haven't actually told us who helped you put this bullshit together. But also, like, why did you put, like, who, like, how are you qualified?
This shit. Yeah, exactly.
How are you, why are you qualified to have put that shit together? Like, why weren't, I'm sorry, y'all, Washington Heights is Washington Heighton in the back, clearly. But it's like, why were you qualified to put this shit together? And like, why weren't you working with organizations? Why weren't you working with coalitions? Why weren't you working with...
We know why, though.
So it's like, why do you, O'Shea, deserve... Like, why are you deserving? Because you put together a piece of paper, nigga. I can put together a document, the fuck? Like, that don't mean I'm deserving of time in the 11th hour. Because that's really what this is about. This is more about what can we do to... 90% sure that call was really about like, let's get over whatever the division is so that we can actually concentrate on a shared goal for Tuesday, because we don't have time to fuck around. Mm-hmm. And Cube wants to continue to fuck around. Well, and we don't have time to fuck around.
Well, because Cube is, you know, again, the story seems to be just getting pushed further and further under the rug, but it's because he's of the angle he's coming from with the whole Qatar thing and Jeff Quantas and Steve Bannon. Like,
and I feel like people aren't really holding his feet to the fire on that.
They're not at all. That's my point. They're not at all. They just think that this guy came with a plan. It's like, though, it's a different agenda. He's doing this because he kind of has been put out there to do it. He's not really trying to help Black America. He's trying to do this in the hopes that he can get this bread from the Qatari to save his league and whatever else he's dealing with.
Yeah, because the press, all his press conversations, like, they're about him and what he thinks and why he thinks it. It's not really about the issues themselves.
Because Cube is, for a producer, Cube is almost a gold mine, because there's a level of unpredictability that comes with a guy like that. Mm. And so what you don't want is, you don't really want straightforward answers, right? You don't want him to have to give you sort of yes or no's, or sort of answer these tough questions. What you would love to see him do is either ramble or go off on a tangent, or, you know, have the facial expressions and all of that, because he... Yes, because it's great TV and it's great clips, right? So if you can get that 40, that 35 second, that minute sound bite of him, you know, railing off on the Biden campaign or why he was slighted by the Dems or any of that sort of shit, it moves the needle, man. It clicks, yeah. It clicks.
Yeah. Did you see your man, the Bunker Boy, did the speech in Omaha, Nebraska, or Lincoln, Nebraska, actually.
Omaha. I saw the people
left. Omaha, Lincoln.
Oh, Omaha. I saw the people left out in the cold because there was no transportation.
No transportation. Them in so he did a speech out there. It was so cold. He cut his speech short because he's a punk anyway. So he was like, "That's cold. I'm leaving." So he gets back on the plane and bounces. Apparently, the Trump campaign, and that they hired these buses to bring these people from. It was 4 miles from, I guess, where the main parking lots are to where the speech was, but they didn't pay the buses. So then the buses was like, that's why the buses left. It was like, wait, are we getting paid? We out. So now there's these 6,000 people stranded in the middle of some, you know, open air place in Omaha, Nebraska, temperatures 30 degrees, 4 miles away from their vehicles. People tried to walk it. Some old people like got put in the hospital because of hypothermia. Like I saw something online. It was people had a Twitter account of the Omaha police blog.
Yeah,
and it was like crazy. Like the police were like, "Yo, we need buses out here now." Like people,
because the police like, "What you want us to do about it?"
Yeah, they were like, "We don't have no, we can't get y'all over there." And they said people were like starting to get delusional because it was cold and they had been standing on it. Because remember, like they had the speech, but they out there way earlier than that. Right. So they had been out there for a while. Of course he was late. So they've been out there for like hours.
Yeah.
And now it's dark and cold. So like, it just
I was just show. Like, I hope these motherfuckers in Omaha got the mental for. Like, listen.
You don't give a fuck about y'all.
God has been sending signs and motherfuckers.
He really has.
Frustrations to
he really has.
It's like, I got flies landing on niggas' heads the whole time. Yeah. Got COVID. I'm leaving y'all niggas stranded and literally stranded in the fucking cold. Like, get the and that's what really kills me. Like all of these like fundamentalist right wing evangelical Christians, like these are the things that y'all should be reacting to.
Exactly.
This shit, right? This is exactly what y'all love. So the fact that you can see these and you're still just
and ignore them, because racism trumps everything.
It's the racism. It's nothing but the racism. That's all it can be at that point. That's all it fucking can be. And I'm like, that's so. But and like Trump. Trump is mad he got to be at Omaha in the first place. He don't want to be there.
Yeah, he don't want to be there.
He's mad that he has to stump on this level because shit is so bad. So he's faded. He's cranky. He doesn't really care. Like, this is all, it's all a disaster. And honestly, like, my nerves are starting to get bad as we're getting closer to Tuesday. I got to work the polls on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Miss Naima with the clipboard. Go over here, baby. Now, where your papers at?
A good walking shoes.
A good walking shoes. Yeah. with an ace band drive around a knee.
No, I got the toys that have the carbon in them, you know, because they're...
The carbon joints.
They help my joints out.
My grandbabies tell me the carbon thing gonna help.
Yeah, the carbon joints. You told me to take some turmeric. But I had actually hoped they were gonna put me on an early voting.
Which poll are you working?
The Triangle Building over on 160. It's behind the BBQs.
Okay.
Over on 165.
Yeah.
So it's two blocks from my house. Three blocks.
Okay.
From my house.
Okay.
Bad. But the day starts at 5 a.m. But I knew that when I applied to be a poll worker, I knew it's gonna be a long ass day. But anyway, I wish that I could put stock or faith in poll numbers, early voting indicators, like all of those things. Even I have a friend who works closely with the Biden campaign, and she's like, listen, we're strong. It's a strong lead. But the thing is that between not even just niggas being, when I say niggas being niggas right now, I'm not just talking about Black men, I'm talking about just Americans in general. Like, I just don't trust niggas because America's stupid. And I don't trust Trump. Like, who knows what the fuck this nigga might declare war on Saturday. Like, I don't know. Like, he might do anything. You know what I mean?
Because he's desperate. Right
desperate.
Now.
Like, I don't know. My nerves gonna be bad till, and I'm not watching returns on, I mean, I'll be at.
You're not gonna watch them?
I'll be at the polls until we close, until we finish all the until you can't leave until every single ballot is accounted for. But I'm not watching returns when I come home. Cause last year, I will never but 2016, I will never forget when they said that, like, you know, there was no path for Hillary anymore. I just was waiting for somebody to say psych. Like, I could not
just kidding.
I could not believe it. I can't go through. And even though now I'm more prepared-ish for it, I just can't go through that again. I can't. I really can't.
Well, let's keep praying on it, man. Let's keep praying on it. Kim Kardashian had a birthday party in the islands, and this caused some type of uproar on the...
The birthday party itself didn't cause an uproar.
Not in the islands.
Go ahead, bro.
Not a private island.
A private island.
It's not the fact that she had it. It's the fact that this bitch posted about it and said that...
They did the COVID testing.
Did it as an escape so that they could pretend things were normal.
I try
not to use the word tone deaf anymore because I've been told it's ableist. It was the total.
Wait. Time. Tone deaf is what?
The lack of reading the room.
Ableist.
What does that mean?
Tone deaf. So to say that something is tone deaf suggests that it speaks to deafness, literal deafness.
No, it doesn't.
It's a metaphor for literal deafness. Yes, it is.
Tone deaf means that you can't pick up the music.
You can't pick up. I know, but it's a form of deafness. So it is like
y'all niggas, man.
It's rephrasing.
I'm not mad at you. I'm just like,
I know, but it's kind of like how we say that there are phrases that we use in lexicon that have racist origins that we should reframe. It's kind of
I'm just trying, I'm getting so tired, or even
a phrase like the blonde leading the blonde, like we've been asked, or
Indian giver, or
yes,
I can't say gal.
Indian giver is terrible.
what about Indian sunburn when you twist your arm and the skin,
none of that shit, old nigga.
I've started to say either off note or obtuse. It was off note. She literally just like
it's off note.
It was off note. Like you. How do you not see how that shit reads? You know what I'm saying? Like, have your little rich private shit and have it be rich and private. Like, shut the fuck up, nigga.
We're not only
in the midst of COVID, numbers going back up. Niggas is broke, and we got an election coming in a few days that your husband has been helping fuck up. So, like, shut your ass up, please.
Inka, go ahead, because I got some thoughts.
I think people are just upset because she's flaunting the means that none of us have right now. Like, nobody can just pretend shit is normal for 3 or 4 days with their closest friends and family in a tropical location. Like, that's not a reality for any of us. We all want to go on vacation, but, like, bitch, are you in the powder keg that we're in? Like, do you see this? Now is not the time.
Good, bro. You got something to say? I'm going to laugh.
Jeff is like,
yeah, I mean,
right now.
I guess my issue, listen, my issue is not how wealthy people spend their money, right? Like, it's, they can do whatever they like. Showing, there is a level of gratuitousness that comes with how they do some things. And listen, in fairness, this may have been something that they didn't pay entirely for.
Yeah.
And may have needed to post. Yeah. And may have needed to post in order to fulfill some level of obligation to getting this situation. But you know, look, if they're able to do that, they did whatever they needed to do, that's fine. But like I said when I posted, no one needed to know. Like, no one needed to know. No one would have been the wiser if no one had posted a picture. And it's this sort of weird-ass, you know, space that they're in where everything, every piece of their life, everything is for consumption. And this was one that you could have just made a private moment. You know, maybe not post it now, maybe post it, you know, a little bit later. Maybe say, hey, these were throwbacks from, you know. But just, you know, I'm not going to kill them for wanting to have some level of normalcy, you know, and wanting to hug their family and hug their friends. You know what I'm saying? And I think oftentimes people who are wealthy sort of get, you know, dehumanized is the wrong word, maybe. But, right, there is some, like, their humanity and their want to love and feel and touch somehow gets, you know, pushed to the side. Like they're not, they don't want those things as well. And if you're able to afford those things, why not? You know what I'm saying? If you have the means, why not?
Yes,
you don't have to. I don't put everything I do on the fucking gram. Okay, because it ain't for every because everything is not for consumption.
I agree with that.
I also don't make my living off posts, right? Like that's a big part of their income.
Yes, yeah.
But I hope that you know, keeping up with the Kardashians is done, right? And I think that I think this age of Kardashian, the public social reality side of the Kardashian era is finally starting to transition or end or whatever. And it's not so much about them themselves as it is they represent this reality driven, social media obsessed, material things, optics, perception based space that we've been in. Collectively, it's not even just like Americans, Black people, young people, old people, like globally for like the past decade. And I think that era is finally about to close out. I think people are realizing the harm it's done, how far it's transcended into the public consciousness. I mean, it's the reason, if it wasn't for reality TV, Trump would not be president. Like, let's just be 100% real, right? So it's like, because it was the apprentice that made people believe this motherfucker could lead a country. Yeah. So I think that some of the public consciousness is starting to realize like, okay, maybe we need to get back to some real shit. I'm not saying it's massive, but I think that the Kardashians era is starting to come to a close because I mean, that was just distasteful. It was really nasty. Unnecessary.
I got something
like,
to say.
Why? Go ahead.
All you niggas who got your PPE loans and your PPP loans and your SBE loans, all I saw this summer was niggas in the middle of the pandemic in Tulum. I saw so many niggas who didn't even know what Tulum was up
and
in Tulum.
And they ain't not the ones mad, though. But they're not the ones mad at that post.
Okay, because I'm like, I ain't seen nobody mad at them niggas.
Oh, nigga, we all mad at them, too. No. As per usual.
Yeah, niggas.
Jeffrey, you talking about, as per usual, Jeffrey, your timeline is not the same as everybody else's motherfucking timeline.
y'all niggas is mad at the Tulum niggas.
Jeff, stay saying, y'all niggas wasn't mad at some shit that we was absolutely mad at. Hell yes, Mexico's numbers have been going back up, by the way.
Well, of course.
Jamaica's too.
There was a whole bunch of niggas that got stranded in the middle of hurricane season because they had no business being in Tulum in the middle of hurricane season. Like, we've been talking about that. We may not have been shaming it publicly on social media.
That's what I mean. Some people have, but people have been, right?
So it's like, there's definitely been conversations about Mexico. There's definitely been conversations about niggas in Jamaica, Mexico, wherever. I also have felt a way about Tulum because I'm like, Tulum ain't even that spot. It's supposed to be the quiet spot. Like,
it was.
Y'all niggas done can't cool it out. But also, like, but there also has been a backlash of two people who are like suggesting that Black folks make things ghetto. So then it's like the backlash to the backlash. So some people have been laying low because they don't want to be called elitist or be talking about for counting other people's pockets and blah, blah, blah. But I do think there is a separation between the people who are talking about Kim, because it's not just Black folks, it's white folks too. Let's get that straight.
Yeah, no, that's what white folks mad at.
It's tacky.
Was that nigga Kanye there?
I don't know. I didn't see any pictures.
I mean, he probably wasn't
in the middle of a presidential campaign, Jeffrey. He can't.
Oh yeah, right.
He probably wasn't.
For his wife's 40th birthday. Like, I think, like, I mean,
nigga was stumping.
First of all, it was a gang of people. Right?
There was a lot of them.
And
I saw your man Tristan Thompson was up in there.
And then you see like the
with a short set on.
Like it's just well, go ahead.
Let's just say for the sake of numbers, it's 60 people, right? Like, let's just say for the sake of numbers, it's 100 people. All of that can be contained on an island. I understand that people don't really want to hear that. And they want to, this is not the same as these niggas at the hookah bar in Atlanta. Okay, no. It's not.
Them niggas
okay,
down
this is
there.
This is if what she's saying is accurate, and I believe it to be so, because tests are easier to come by, particularly when you have money. You can test people when you have 6,000 and 7,000 square foot homes. It is very easy to quarantine for a week or two. Okay, mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to the grocery store anyway. Okay, yeah. You're not going to do essential.
You ain't gotta
shit
go
anyway.
Pick up your cleaners, the stuff out the
right.
Cleaners.
You know what I'm saying?
Get my shirts out the cleaners.
Yeah, you got gyms in the house. You got all. So what I'm saying is, we are their lifestyle lends itself to being able to do all of the things in the right steps and take the precautions to do so. The poor and tactless part of this was saying that there was no need to say that this is what we did. That's the issue. You know what I'm saying? There was just no real, in my opinion, there was no need to put that out there, because to me, it's I don't know, man. I've always felt like there's certain shit that's just tacky. You know, when people are not in a position to do certain shit, I just don't necessarily know it's a good idea to rub it in their face that you are able to do certain shit.
All right, let's move on. Sidebar: Dave Letterman's show is back up on Netflix. He's got an interview with Kim, and an interview
Wait,
with
what
Dave. Dave Letterman. You know he has that show. He's at
my next guest.
Yeah, so it's Kim, Chappelle, Lizzo, and I forget the fourth one. I watched the Chappelle.
Robert Downey Jr.
I watched the Kim and the Chappelle interview, and they were both very, very good. Very good. So just wanted to mention that. Did y'all watch Boosie and Mike Tyson?
I saw the clip. I saw one clip.
You watch it, bro?
I watched about the most uncomfortable 10 minutes I could get through.
What'd you think about it?
Well, I thought
I think that Boosie knew a real nigga when he was talking to one and knew to come correct.
I definitely, like I said on Twitter, when a New York nigga between the ages of like 40 and 60 says, yo, check this out, and does the hand motion, yo, check this out, you better check it out, my nigga. Yeah. Like I promise you, check it out. Because it might not go the way you think it's going to go, my nigga.
Yeah, exactly. It ain't what you think it is.
What I found very interesting was basically, you know, Mike was talking to him like a little nigga, right? Like, because to Mike, he's a shorty. You know, Mike's a shorty. And so it was just really interesting to hear that tone, because I haven't heard a tone like that from an older dude since I was maybe like 18 when I was a young
man.
Since I've heard that kind of conversation, and I mm-hmm. thought it was really important. And here's what I thought was most important, was that he actually agreed with Boosie about D-Wade's son.
Yeah.
When you listen to it, he says, I agree with you. But what he says, which is most important, was, it ain't my fucking place.
Yeah.
Right. Boosie was like, I was offended. Like, how the fuck you offended? Yeah.
That's basically what Mike was saying. And the other thing that I loved about Mike was that, you know, he's in a different space. Now, I will say, I've listened to a few of his interviews, and I've watched the progression of Mike maybe over mm-hmm. the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, Mike has gotten a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
In some of these spaces,
he got it from T.K. Kirkland too. You saw that?
Yes, he's beginning to be a little more irritable. Now I don't know if that's because of the taping. I feel like it's because
the show's obviously gotten extremely popular. They're making a lot of money, and they're shuffling people in and out. So like Mike is like, oh, this, I don't know. Who the fuck is this nigga? Like, I think it's kind of like a lot of that. Because even with Boosie, man, he's like, oh, we got to cut the show. We got to go talk to the next guest. Like, he's like,
yeah,
it's like 2-3 a day kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, they might be churning him out. But, you know, I I'm from Brooklyn, man. So Mike is...
You know that energy.
Mike is the Mike was around some real live thoroughbreds, bro.
Killers.
For real. Like, so when people was like, yeah, you know, he ain't going to do that with that 40. Like, nigga, if you think Mike is scared of a nigga pulling a gun out on him, I got another thing for you.
Like, man, this is
I got another thing for you.
So funny to me, the fact that we can even be in an era where niggas would question the thoroughness of Mike fucking Tyson.
Well, like, yeah, because he's an old, because we have to remember, if like, you're 25 or 30, Mike is almost a caricature to you.
Yeah. Because you wasn't there.
You were not living to know that he beat the fucking brakes off a dude in the middle of the street, like broke his hand on his fucking eye socket.
Yeah.
Like, Mike, you know, Mike comes from a different era. And so what the last thing I'll say on this, what I loved was that Mike was saying, he basically was asking him, yo, who are you? And while it was done in a very New York sort of way, he was really trying to say, like, aside from fluff, you know, Boosie tries to go into, you know, I'm from the slums. And Mike was like, yeah, nigga, we all from the slums.
Yeah, whatever. That's not who you are. I'm not impressed.
Like, that's not, and that was the type of conversation that I think needs to happen more often.
Yes.
Like, if that
with a lot of these niggas
happens, yes, if that conversation happens in the barbershop more, then you might see a little less, you know, wilding out on social media.
Yeah, I've actually been saying for the past few weeks, like, we have to bring back, and this might sound like, this is the other side of the stop being so PC conversation that, like, the comedians and stuff are having. Like, we need to make it okay to tell niggas they're wrong again. To tell niggas you stupid, to tell niggas this don't make no fucking sense. Because now all of a sudden it's, oh, you think you're smarter than, oh, you being bougie, oh, you being elitist, oh, you being da 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 da. Because this pseudo-intellectualism barbershop bullshit I was talking about is part of an anti-intellectualism movement, right? It's part of, like, anti-information, anti, like, actual academia, anti-facts, stats, anti-media, anti-everything, where niggas is like, we basically don't trust anything that anybody printed on paper anywhere ever. And it's like, well, nigga, where the fuck are you getting your information from, type shit, right? Like, you just supposed to observe it out, you know, absorb it out the fucking sky
and through Facebook.
Ancestors. You know what I'm saying? Like, you believe a meme, but if I send you, like, 30, like, three different links that say the opposite, you're going to be like, well, I don't trust that, this bias, you know, type shit. We have to normalize, actually, and I want to retire normalize, but we actually do have to normalize actually being like, no, nigga, you're wrong. Like, everything ain't a difference of opinion. Sometimes you're just fucking wrong. Like, wrong, you sound crazy. This is stupid. Like, I grew up in a household where stupid was a bad word. I have used the word stupid more in the past 4 years than I've used my entire life. This shit is stupid. And you sound crazy. And you look crazy. And you're making the rest of us look crazy because it's stupid. And, like, if we could get back to that place, like, not everybody's opinion, like we said, everybody's picture can't go on the refrigerator. People who just participated do not deserve the same trophies as the motherfuckers who won. Like, stop letting everybody feel like they have right. Boosie should have never felt okay saying anything about anybody else's kid. Like, who the fuck are you, nigga?
But Boosie keeps, you know, the people around Boosie, like, make him feel that way. And I thought what I thought was very interesting is, I mean, I watched the whole interview. The whole interview was very interesting. But one of the things that caught me right away was when Boosie walked in, he walked in with that, what's the word? Like, kind of like that barbershoppy nigga, like, yo, nigga, I used to watch your fights all the time, nigga. And Mike immediately was like, sit down, man.
Right.
Like, Mike immediately read him, was like, we're not, the interview you thought we was going to do, walking in with that goofy shit, we're not doing that, bro. And I don't know if Mike had planned on sunning him that hard, but Mike immediately was like, oh, I'm not. Mike's been around, he's been in prison, he can read niggas. He's like, oh, you thought you was going to come in here and take over and just make this, like, some goofy, boozy.
Well, he also probably didn't expect Tyson to be that real. I don't think niggas listen to Mike talk. Niggas do not listen to Mike talk. He is incredibly thoughtful and insightful.
Yeah,
and
he's smart.
Think that people miss that, yeah.
But I think Boosie thought he was going to come in and just, you know, say a lot of crazy shit. And Mike was going to be like, yeah, nigga, that's right. Yeah, Dwayne Wade shit. Yeah. And then Mike was like, no, sit the fuck down. And you basically, like Nia said, you're looking crazy out here, nigga. And I'm going to just give you some jewels for the next 25 minutes. You take with them what you want, but I'm going to give them to you. And it's your and you saw Boosie got quieter. and quieter. One, you know, yes, mm-hmm. it might have been a little bit of intimidation, but also I think this is one of the first times, maybe if not ever, that somebody just cut to the white dude like that on him.
Somebody that he had no choice but to actually listen to.
And respect. Cut him to the white meat like, nah, nigga, you sounding crazy out here, bro. Like, you out here, like, what are you doing? Like, you know, so I thought it was very interesting. And people, I think, you know, people just spun it as, oh, Mike, this son, Boozy. But it was more than that. It was way more than that. And like you said, we do need more of these conversations. Like, you know, even now, you know, like, I go see my man Branson sometime and start and talk to him and stuff. And like, you know, like, that's how he talks to me, you know, and I listen. You know what I'm saying? I don't be like, nah. I'm like, nah, B, blah, blah, blah. And I listen. And he drops a lot of jewels about a lot of things. And, you know, and there's a couple of cats I talk to like that, and I appreciate it. We need more of that.
I think Boosie only receives that message from somebody like a Mike Tyson anyway.
I agree. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Fuck is you, nigga. You don't know. Like, where's your Rolex or whatever, you know? What do y'all think about this whole... France and Germany shutting down?
I think that they are trying to get ahead of the second wave because they learned from the first wave, unlike some of us.
Yeah.
I can't be mad. I literally can't be mad. I can, like, if you see where you delayed too long, or you were too lax in measures the first time, you like, nope, we're gonna nip it in the bud the second time. Like, they're doing it before it gets too bad, right?
Yeah, especially now with this time of year with the flu season and everything else, you know, the cold weather.
I get it. I think Chicago is going into some form of going back into some form of restrictions on Friday.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for Cuomo to tell us that shit is coming. Like, it makes sense.
They gotta do Georgia, bro. Like, I mean, seriously, like I told you, like, I was in Atlanta like 2 weeks ago. Nothing's closed, and the clubs is popping, and niggas on the
new spots have opened. It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And they got after hour spots. Niggas is going from the club to the after hour spot till 5-6 in the morning. Like, they gotta do something, man, because the shit is, you know. And I'm scared. Like, in this winter, you know, cases are going up. And this winter, like, you're gonna hear like, yo, so and so down in Atlanta died. You know, I think you're going to start hearing more of that shit because people are just out here doing whatever. I got to give a final shout out to a cat, Harlem cat named Denny Moe. He owned the barbershop forever, and he died of the COVID. I found that out a couple of days ago, so peace to him and his family. He had a very popular shop that's obviously going to probably close down now. Y'all got anything else to say before... we shut it down?
I just want y'all niggas to not embarrass us on Tuesday, please. I'm really happy with the early voting numbers. It is encouraging to see that the Trump campaign is scared, but it also worries me because there is literally nothing I put beyond
them. Yeah, that they won't do to win. Yeah.
Exactly. There's literally nothing I put beyond and beneath them. So I also want to encourage everybody to not be overconfident in what you're seeing, because, you know, the Comey October surprise was 2016 today. Look how close we are to the election. It was today, right? Mm. That's oh God, just how different things could have been. But also, I want to encourage you, I know it's not an easy conversation to have, but like, the age of I don't really get into politics is over. So I really would encourage you to talk to your friends who are still on the fence about voting, especially, if you're in a battleground state. I think it's really important. If you're in a Pennsylvania, if you're in a North Carolina, if you're in Texas, I think it is really important that you not only have your own plan, but that, like, encourage a friend, an elder, a church member, a coworker. Talk to them, because those are the places where, like, this shit can really make a difference. And I think people sometimes aren't aware. If you're in a deep blue state, fuck it. If you're in a deep red state, fuck it. But like, if you're in a battleground state, like, don't just have your own plan. Talk to people around you about their plan, because we need all that shit.
Inca?
Two real quick things. Number one, I voted via mail a couple of weeks ago. I got my my receipt, I guess, via email saying that they received my ballot. But if you're this close and you still have your
absentee, do not put it in the mail.
Yeah, to your authorized location, make sure that you get, you know, don't just whatever. And then secondly, we have already gotten snow up here, and I know it's a little bit different than where most of the listeners are, but make sure you have your emergency preparedness plan together. Like, we keep all of our like important papers together in the same place, do like little fake intruder drills. Like, I'm getting really comfortable with the shotgun that we have in my house. Just
don't come up in there fucking around. You go walk out with holes in your boy.
There's water and a change of clothes in my car. Like, I always keep, you know, my pencil, my belt on me. Shout out to Sean. just stay safe out here, man. Like, seriously, especially like single women. If you live alone, please have a plan. Please have someone you can contact. If you don't know how to run a drill from your bed in the middle of the night to the front seat of your car, like, get that in your mind. Set an alarm 3 weeks from now that you'll forget about and just run through that, because that kind of shit is important and there's a lot going on. But just sure that you take care of yours and you're okay.
Okay. Bro, what you got?
And put some goddamn gas in that car. Don't fuck around and 3 a.m. you run into that car. You got 15 miles to empty, nigga.
$3 worth in there.
Got $3 worth of gas. that's it, man. We're gonna vote in person. We've gotten our ballots. New Jersey was one of the states that automatically sent you ballots. But we decided we were gonna go in person. And make sure that we were straight. Actually, we wound up not getting Justin's. And so he called to make sure and went in and make sure he was still registered. We actually had this weird thing happen in our town where, like, the mail, there was like there was something like 2,000 pieces of mail in a garbage bin. And out of those pieces of mail, there was like 99 mail and ballots that were in that garbage bin. Not quite sure where the investigation led, but, you know, so if you're not getting your stuff or if you haven't gotten your stuff, go in, check, make sure that you're registered, find out your local board of election. It's usually going to be at a county building, but just confirm that and make sure, like, you know, just to reiterate, do not put your mail and ballot in the mail at this point. And we're going to make it a family outing. You know, my 87-year-old mother-in-law is here. She, you know, wants to go. So we're going to, you know, we're going to slap a knee brace on her and get her some water.
Exactly.
You know, get her ready. I'm taking a little chair.
Change the tennis balls on the walker.
Take tennis balls on the walker. All that, you know, make sure she's good. Hopefully we're not out there too long, but, you know. That's pretty much it. And yes, it is going to be very important for you guys, especially as we get to winter, to start to really think about your safety, taking precautions, going through your home, making sure that, you know, your shit is locked properly, that you are not being easy targets.
And I second all those emotions. You know, be safe out here and keep wearing your mask. Keep wearing your mask. I'm going to say it again because it's just keep wearing your mask. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Next time we speak to y'all will be after the election.
Yeah.
It'll be a very, very, very interesting next show. Let's pray that it's what we need. And we'll see y'all next week.
Later. Thank you, guys.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.